Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Homer, patiti et bito shel ploni. Mishalem boshet upgam al piatzmo. Veinu mishalem knas. The Mishnah here is working with the principle, which is going to be developed through the Mishnah, is that amode b'knas patur. Someone who, on their own volition, admits to being chayav a knas, they are patur from the knas. It's learned out from the psukim that say, me'asher yashiun elukim, that only if they are made culpable, which means through a deem that they're made culpable, will they pay knas. But you can't be marshiyah piatzmo. They can't indict themselves to have to pay a knas. So anything that is classified as a knas or a fine will be exempted if the person admits to the crime and comes and tells us that he did it. We know about the information through him. On the other hand, anything that's mamon, anything that's monetary, he will have to pay. So here in the case of mifuta, he says, I admits to the fact that he was mifateh et bitosho ploni. He pays boshet and pigam, which are monetary payments that have connection to the crime and to the act or infraction that took place. On the other hand, with regards to the knas, the payment of the 50 shekel kesef, there he will be exempt because he is admitting to the fact. Omer ganavti, person who says that I stole, mishalem et karen al piatzmo, then he has to make restitution for the damage that he did, which is the karen, that he has to do. Ve'ein mishalem tashlumei kefel, the double payment to the kefel that is associated with theft, he won't pay, because that's clearly a fine. That is something beyond the value of the object that he stole. V'tashlumei arba'a v'chamisha. The same thing is true with regards to paying 4 or 5 times, partly because they're made up of kefel plus, but also because they themselves are also a penalty that is a knas, because it's nothing to do with the underlying value of the damage done. Why you put a multiplier on there is only, in a sense, deterrent or a penalty for what he did, but it's not connected to the actual damage that he did. Hemit shariyat ploni, o shoro shel ploni. President says, my shore killed so-and-so, or my shore killed so-and-so's shore. Harizem mishalem al piatzmo. Then he's going to pay for it. Now, in the case where it damaged another shore, that's nezek. That's paying monetary restitution for the damage that's done. In the case where his shore killed a person, then he's chayav be'kofer. Let's deal with the shorm wad or shor tam. We'll discuss the differences later on in the Gemara. But if they went ahead and they killed another party, the person has to pay kofer. Because he himself did not do the killing, it was some, let's assume, possibly negligence on his part, that his money, his possessions went ahead and damaged someone else or now killed someone else, he has to pay kofer. So Rashi says over here, kasavar kufra mimona. Rashi says that this Tana obviously believes that kofer is monetary restitution, and therefore when he admits to it, he's got to pay it because he's paying money, he's not paying a knas. The interesting thing is that there's a machloket with regards to kofer. How do you assess the value of the kofer? So there's one of two ways. One is demei nizak, and one is demei mazik. So now, if we say that it's demei nizak, that it's the value of the one who was killed, and that's how he pays the kofer, you can understand why kufra memonahu, because it's connected to the value of the individual that was killed. Other than, as Tosafot points out, if you say that it is demei mazik, he's really redeeming himself from death. He's paying for himself not to be mita bidei shamayim. So then, what does that have to do with the damage that he did? Right? It could be a knas in a sense, because it's more like along the lines of monetary amount that has nothing to do or not connected to the damage that he did. So that's what Tosafot asks. According to one who says Dmei Mazik, then it should be a knas over here. And maybe we should say that he should be Patur in that instance. Dhaino Dmei Mazik, lo chashiv yoter mimashi izik. Afo pim shepamim shavye mazik yoter minizak. The pigeon of shohu notain. Along the lines of what David's suggesting, which is that when he pays the main mazik, that is the value of what he needs to do. The value of what he needs to do is redeem himself from death. So therefore, he's not paying more than the damage. The damage or the component of payment here is related to his value, because he has to redeem himself from death. And therefore, it's not considered to be a knas or detached from the damage that is done. And therefore, Tosafot seems to suggest that you could say this both according to Demei Nizak and Demei Mazik. From Rashi, who says that Kufra Mamona, it seemingly implies That's one of the two deot, not both of them. And therefore, it would lean towards the side that says it's the main nizak. And that's likely what Rashi is suggesting over here. All right, so then, Hemichari Avdosho Ploni. If my shor killed the Eved Knani of so-and-so, in Parshat Mishpatim, it says that if a shor kills an Eved Knani, you pay 30 shekel, fixed payment for the Eved. Therefore, you do not pay because it's a kenas. Doesn't matter what the value of the Eved is, it's always a fixed 30 shekel that is paid. Zeklau, here is the principle. Kol mishalem yeter al mashe hezik. Anybody who pays in excess of the damage done, enu mishalem al piatzmo. He does not pay on his own volition. Now, the Gemara will say that the statement is not necessarily minduyak, and that kol mishalem yeter is also someone who pays less or more. It's not really only more, but it does raise the issue that if you are paying less, then we understand why it's a knas for sure. If you are paying more, there is room to suggest over here that the payment will actually be made up of two parts. That when you pay the knas, say it's 30 shekel and he's only worth 25, then it might be when you pay the 30, 25 of it is mamon and 5 of it is knas. So there is a possibility based on the way that the Mishnah writes it, that kol mishalem yeter al mashe hezik and mishalem al piatzmo, that in cases where the value is beneath the value of the knas, that you could look at that as being made up of two components, a component of mamon and a component of knas. Yerushalmi makes that diuk, whereas from the Bavli it does not seem that they are medayik in that way, and they view, as we'll see later on in the Gemara, that Zeklau is all-encompassing in terms of its statement about what is considered to be knas. But the way that the Mishnah is worded leaves open that possibility because only talks about more or in excess of the value of the hezek, where it's clearly a knas because it's not related to the hezek. But where it exceeds, we know also it doesn't relate. But then you have to ask, is it the whole amount then a knas? Or is it made up of mamon and knas now when it is less than the value of the knas? Tosafot already points out, zeh kalal, what does the kalal come to include? Generally, in the Bavli, whenever the Mishnah says Zaklal, we want to know what additional items were left out. So Tosafot over here asked that question. Zaklal koyotem mishleim mamashi ezik. What other things are we missing from this? So he says, two things that we're missing are Motzi Shemra, where he admits to being Motzi Shemra al Betulat Yisrael, where he had made a claim against his wife that she was lo matzi betulim, that he didn't find her to be a betula. Then afterwards he admits that he was lying about that. That is a knas. Motzi Shemra is 100 shekel kesef knas. So if he admits to that, he'll be exempted. The other item he mentions is Yotzei B'Shem Ba'ayin. In a case by an Eved Knani, if the owner knocks out the tooth or the eye of the Eved Knani, he automatically goes free. That's also a knas because it's almost like Zerat HaKatov that the Eved is freed. There's no relationship between the freedom and the activity that was here. So again, if he admits to that, then also he is exempted from the knas. So Tosafot says those are the two exceptions that are included by Zeklau, even though they're not mentioned in our Mishnah. So now the Mara says, Pelitnei Anasti. The Mishnah begins, Homer Patiti et Bito. Why doesn't it say Anasti et Bito? Why does the Mishnah use Patiti instead of Anasti? The Gemara's question is not, we're assuming that he's lying about the fact whether he was Me'anes or Mefateh. He's telling the truth when he says Patiti, and he's also telling the truth when Anasti. Why wouldn't you start the Mishnah with Anasti when we look at all the other Mishnayot around here? They all start with Me'anes. Me'anes is the classic case. And then we learn Mifputah from that. Mifputah is just a lower grade Anasti. It's missing the tsar aspect to it. He's again not forced to marry her. But it's the same thing. You would have used the example here would have been Anasti. And as Tosafo points out, that would have been a bigger chiddush. Because Davi chiddush tvei de patur afagav de modesh asapritzut. Despite the fact that he's admitting to doing such a terrible act, nevertheless, we're still saying that he is patur. So that definitely should have been the case that's mentioned in the Mishnah. So according to Tosafot, the reason to say Anasti instead of Patiti is because Anasti would have been a greater Chiddush. According to Rashi, it seems that he just wants them to add in Anasti. Why are you only mentioning Patiti? Let us also say Anasti and capture both of these items in the Mishnah, especially since that the other Mishnayot would have given precedence to Anasti over Patiti. Let me buy you, Kamar. The Mishnah is telling me not only this, but this. Love me, boy, Anasti. You don't have to tell me about Anasti. The loka pugim la. Because in that case, he's not causing her any shame or any questionable behavior. There, the Mishalem, Boshet u'Pagam al pi atzmo. There, certainly, he'll have to pay for Boshet u'Pagam when he does that, because his admission to rape is only an indictment of himself. So when he indicts himself, he's patur min haknas, and he pays the boshet and the begam and the tsar, those things that are monetary compensation, he will make restitution on. Aval patiti, when he admits the fact that he seduced this girl, the kol pogim la. Over there, he's not only indicting himself, in a way he's indicting the girl as well, because she succumbed to the seduction. And that means that there's a negative associated with what he's saying about the girl. Ema lo mishalem al piatzmo. Maybe over there, he would not pay on his own volition. It'll have two aspects. One is, we won't believe him with regards to the knas, but we also will not believe him with regards to the mamon. He won't have to make the payments of boshet u'pagam, because his indictment of himself also casts aspersions on this girl. And we're not going to let him do that. Kamash Malon, our Mishnah teaches us that that's not the case. That even though, through his saying that patiti and admitting that he seduced this girl, he's also causing some negative aspects to this girl, nevertheless, he still pays al pi atzmo, and we accept his testimony. So, matanitza l'loki hai tana. Our Mishnah is not in accordance with the position of this tana. Tatani, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Shimon. So we have a member on the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai from Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. Af, boshet bugam enu mishalem al pi atzmo. Even boshet and bugam, he cannot pay on his own volition. So, lo kolo emenu, shivkom bito, shoploni. Exactly what would have been the Havamina that the Gemara says our Mishnah rejects. That Havamina is the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, which is that he doesn't have the right to cause this girl now to have aspersions cast about her behavior, sully her reputation. That's not in his power to do something like that. According to this Shita of Rabbi Shimon, then, my, if she's okay with that, what's the din? Maybe it's not her father does not want to have this. She might be okay with her reputation becoming this way, but her father certainly is not happy with his daughter having such a reputation. If her father's okay with this. Now, the reason that it might be okay with them is not because they're okay with selling their reputation. The reason is they're going to get money out of this. The question is the trade-off worth it? Is she willing to sell her reputation to get the boshet and begam, to get the payment over here? It's a question of money versus reputation. The father also might be willing. So also over here, the father might make a decision that in terms of the reputation of his daughter and what will happen, it's worth it to him to get the payment to allow this to go through. So they both could make a rational decision to say that we're willing to sacrifice the reputation in order to get the monies. So the Gemara says, okay, it's okay for them to make that decision. It's okay for the father and the daughter to make that decision because, in a sense, they are the recipients or the beneficiaries of the payment. But what about the rest of the family? The rest of the family is also hurt by the behavior of this individual. So the Gemara says, Nechalulu b'nei mishmacha mai. So what happens if the family is okay with it? The Gemara says, you can never get the whole family on board. I mean that there's always somebody in the family who's not going to be happy with this type of behavior. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai that says it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the daughter's okay with it. Doesn't matter if the father's okay with it. Doesn't matter if the local family's okay with it. Somebody in the family's reputation is going to be hurt by this, or is going to feel that their reputation is going to be hurt by this. And therefore, he doesn't have a right to come, not only to indict himself, but to hurt other parties here. And since he doesn't have a right to hurt other parties, we're not going to let him pay boshet u'pagam based on his own testament. Now, if Edim show up, then there's no choice. The act was committed. We can't deny the fact that there was an act committed over here if we have true Edut. The only thing we're not going to allow is this individual himself to indict himself and then the other parties involved over here, because that's not, I'll call it regular procedures. That's not the normal way that we bring evidence to the court. And so because of that, he doesn't have such a right. If the girl also admits to it, then you may not have an issue then, because she's also admitting to the action. Here it's coming only from his side that he's admitting to it. The question is, if the other parties are agreeing. The other parties may say, no, it didn't happen, deny that it happened. You know, it's not clear here what the other parties are saying in this case. Omer ganavti mishalem etzikarin. Itmar. Where it says, palga nizko. What happens to half nezek? Half nezek is what a short time pays when he does damage. This is a classic sugyo in the Gemara in Baba Kama with regards to palga nizko. When the time does damage, he pays half the value of the damage that he did. The reason being that Karen is Mishuna. Karen, or to be Nogeach, is not the normal activity of a shor. Now, he does do it sometimes. But in general, Shvarim are not Nagchanim. It's not their regular activity. It's not the normal way that they interact with other people or other animals. There are certain activities which they do engage in. They do bite. They do kick. Those are normal types of damage that they cause, and therefore you pay Nezek Shalem. With regards to goring, or regards to any Nezek that's Mishuna, where he does something that is unusual and causes Nezek, he'll be considered the first three times he does it, he's a Tam, because we assume it really is unusual behavior, and we'll see in a reason why maybe he should be Patur over here. But because of that unusual behavior, he only pays half Nezek. Once it becomes a Chazoka that he acts in this way, then it's no longer unusual behavior. Then the owner already knows that his shor acts in this way. He's got to be responsible and take care of it. It becomes a mu'ad, the davarze. Since it's a mu'ad, the davarze, you'll pay nezek shalem. What the Gemara wants to know is the half nezek, what is the nezek? When you pay chatzi nezek, is that mamon or knas? So the obvious, and the Gemara will explain this in a second, which is, if you think he's not chayev anything, he's chayev zero, then whatever he's paying is a knas, because he's paying more than he's obligated. If, on the other hand, you think that he's chayev for the whole amount, and the Torah just gave him a discount or a reduction on it, then with the 50% that he's paying is definitely mamon. It's just that he's exempted on the other 50%. Whatever he is paying is definitely nezek. It's just that he doesn't have to pay the full amount of the nezek. So Rapapa Amar, Palga Nizka Mamona. Rapapa says that half nezek is mamon. Ravuna Breda Rav Yeshua Amar, Palga Nizka Knaso. That half nezek is a knas. Rapapa Amar, Palga Nizka Mamona, Kasavar. Stam Shvarim, Lav Bechezkat Shimur Kaime. A regular shore needs to be watched. The owner needs to watch his shore. He can't let them roam around without being watched because they do cause damage. Now, we will still say damage caused by Karen is unusual, but he still has to be on top of his shore. The fact that his shore did damage already indicates there's some level of negligence because he wasn't on top of it. Now, maybe he shouldn't be as on top of it if he was a muad versus when he's a tam. Therefore, bedinu mishalem kulei. And certainly, he should have to pay everything here. Rachmanu dechayisi lavei, but here the Torah was merachem on him. Dekati lo yayid Torah, because at this point it's not certain that this animal damages in this way. So there's a penalty here in a sense because he should have watched his shor. Since he should have watched his shor, he's culpable for damage that is done. On the other hand, the way the shor acted was something that he could have not have anticipated, and since he couldn't have anticipated it, therefore, we give him a little break here until we know for certain that this animal continues to act this way. And then we're going to say, you got to deal with the animal. Shor Muad, then you're chayav everything because you know that he already acts this way. So there's a mixture of culpability or responsibility here because Shvarim need to be watched. On the other hand, the Torah recognizes that the shor acted unusually or extraordinarily, and therefore we give him a break on the payment. But underlying this is that he's chayav for the entire nezek. The Torah gives him a discount. That means whatever he's paying of the Chatzi Nezek is mamon, and therefore if he admits to it, he will pay it. Then Ravuna Breda Yeshua Mar, Paga Nizka Knasa, that half the Nezek is Knas, Kasavar Stam Shvarim Bechazkat Shimur Kaime. Shvarim are domesticated animals. They can walk around. You do not have to assume that they're going to gore. You do not have to watch them in that careful manner. The assumption is it's hands off, and they should behave themselves. And since they should behave themselves, Dinu Dolo L'Shalim Klau. And over here, you shouldn't have to pay anything because the behemoth acted in an extraordinary manner. But an extraordinary manner where he's a domesticated animal, should take care of himself, should not be worried about Nezek at all. Here he did something out of the ordinary. The Torah imposes a knas on him to wake this guy up and say, you got to start watching this. Sure. Now, we give him a little time. We say, listen, it's not a muad right away. We say, listen, it happened unusually once. You got to pay a little more attention here. How do we get his attention? Pay some money now so that you know the next time he does this, you're going to be on the hook again. So the Torah penalized him, even though he really, in terms of Nezek, is chayav nothing, because the shor acted in a way that he should not have anticipated. Nevertheless, the Torah wants to engage him with the shor. How does it do that? It penalizes him by paying money. If that's the case, Palganizko is knasa. Then it is a knas, and if it's a knas, then if he's modeh b'knas, he would be patur.
Doesn't we say that knas is generally a fixed amount?
There's a knas here. What's the value of the knas? Chatzi nezek. It's not that it's chatzi nezek. I mean, that's a misnomer then. For according to one that says chatzi nezek is knas, it's really knas, which is determined by chatzi nezek. That's the way to formulate. All right, so now the Gemara says, Tznan, hanizak v'amazik b'tashlumim. In the case of shor tam, both parties lose. the nizak and the mazik are losing out over here. If you say that chatzi nezek is mamon, hainu d'shach nizak b'tashlumim. That's why both parties are losing. The mazik really owed 100%. He's paying 50%. And the nizak loses 50% here because he was entitled to 100% of the restitution. In the end, he didn't get it. So he's kind of losing half. And so is the payer. The mazik is also losing half. It's not losing in a sense, but he's paying restitution. He has money out of his pocket. So both parties have money out of their pocket here. Elamanda mar palga niska kanasa. According to Rav Huna Breda Yeshua, it says that chatzi nezek is a kanas. Hashtu delav didei koshokil. Over here, the nizak is getting all that doesn't belong to him. Any money that he gets is in excess of what he should have gotten. Delav didei koshokil b'tashlamim ite. So what type of contribution is he making over here? If he's getting in excess of what he deserves, how can you claim that he is losing money over here? Now, technically you could argue, and the Gemara does not say this, but technically you could argue he lost his shor.
Yeah.
But that's not, but in the sense here, the Mishnah is telling us that chatzi nezek is goreim this problem. But that's not true. What caused the problem of loss of his shor is the goring of the shor, and he lost his shor because the other animal killed it. Now, in terms of the restitution, he's deserving of nothing right now. In that payment, there is nothing there that he is losing. He's only to gain in the payment, because the mazik really owes him nothing. And anything that he puts into the pot here is to the benefit of that party. So now, how do I explain that Mishnah that says, Anizak v'mazik are losing parties over here, or paying parties over here? So, lo nitzrucha l'pachat nevela. So, where it says, you need it for the loss of value in the nevela. So this has to do with the rules of Tom, which is that in the case where an animal gores, an animal that's a Tom gores another animal and kills it, then we assess the value of the nevela. The nevela is worth something if it's sold at that time. The nezek then is the differential between the value of the live animal and the value of the carcass that is there. So if I subtract one from the other, the differential is the nezek, and then he pays chatzi nezek on that. Now what happens in the time period between the time that the animal was killed, it's a carcass, and the time he comes to din? Obviously, there'll be a deterioration in the carcass. If he does not sell it immediately, then there will be a value diminution in the carcass because of the fact that it's rotting, it's deteriorating over that period of time. Whose responsibility is that? The answer of the Mishnayot and Baba Kama is it's the Nizak's problem. It's the one who's sure it was, he's got to be metapel benevela. He's got to deal with the nevela. Means that he's got to sell it, he's got to raise the money, and any loss that is caused by delay or tearing and selling of the nevela is his problem, is on the nizak. So now you want to know what the nizak is paying over here? The nizak over here is paying the fact that he's got to deal with the nevela. Whether he sells it right away, and he has to expend the effort and get the nevela sold, that's his loss. Or on the other side, if he waits and he sells it at a later time, and that causes the value to diminish, that's also, that's literally his loss because he's only getting compensated for the differential between the nevela at the time of the death and the live shor. He will not get paid for the deterioration of the nevela's value. So based on that, he is now also a party to the payments of the losses over here. Now, it's not so clear that that's the case. Tosafot again raises the issue and says, well, the nizak is entitled to nothing. So anything that he gets is a bonus. So why are you looking at the pachat nevela as being a less money that he's getting? It's just that he's getting anything. It's just similar to the case of chatzi nezek, which is he's entitled to zero. And now he gets, not only does he get chatzi nezek, he also gets the value of the nevela at the time of death. Okay, so he doesn't get the pachat nevela, so he loses something. But he's getting him again money that he's technically not entitled to. So everything should be under this rubric, which is he's getting more than he deserves. He's entitled to zero. He's getting the nevela, the value of the nevela. Why should he even be granted that value or that pchat nevela? Tosfot asked that question and says that Afagav delav didei shakil mekom mekom came into zochei le'rachman chatzi nezek chashvin le'bitashlumim. So even though over here he wasn't deserving of anything, once the Torah already grants us the methodology for determining the chatzi nezek, then it turns into a calculation of loss. So you're right. Until the point that the Torah gives us the calculation, it's called a knas. Because he's getting money that he didn't deserve. Once the Torah gives us the methodology for it, then losses that are incurred after that point in time already become monetary losses instead of knas. And that's why the Mishnah calls it a loss in nizak. That's how Tosafot deals with it. There's probably a simpler way to read this, And I could think that I would have read it this way. The Shita Mekubetzet reads it this way, which is that in terms of the Pchat Nevela, the Pchat Nevela is not included in the Knas. The Knas says that there's a Nezek, or the full Nezek, is the amount of money between the full value of the animal and the Nevela. That is what the damage is. Nevela is not included in the damage. Therefore, when he has to be metapel in the nevela, that already is considered to be a monetary issue because it's his and he's got to deal with it. And because he has to deal with it, then it's his loss because it's not included
it's
in the knas.
Right?
It's outside of the picture because it wasn't included in the loss or the nezek that happened over here. So that's probably the way to read it.
I still have a problem though with why the nezek.
The Torah assumes in these cases that we live in a society where there are other people and there are other animals that are there. And when we walk out, like when you go out and drive, you also assume that there are other drivers on the road. Now we expect everybody to make good decisions, and we expect everybody to do the right thing and abide by the laws. Now sometimes people, there are accidents that happen, and other parties do negligence. Now when you go out there and your car gets damaged by these other parties, when you go out there, do you assume the risk that when you're driving that people might hit you and that people might cause damage to your car? The answer is yes. Because that's part of the knowledge of going out there, that there are other parties out there. Same thing here with the Shvarim. When you go out into the Rishut Rabim and you know that other people have their animals out there, that they're walking around, you understand that there could be things that happen along the way. We assume that parties are responsible, and then in cases where they know these animals cause damage, they're going to be on top of it. But in other cases, just like he wants to let his shore go sometimes, you also want to let your shore go. And so there's, again, I would say almost a societal pact that we all agree that we're going to act in this manner, and we're going to agree that this is normal behavior. And since it's normal behavior, he's not entitled to compensation. It's an unfortunate circumstance, is right. The answer. And so now, Rumai says, Pechat Nevela Tanina. If that's what you're saying, this Mishnah is telling us that the Nizak loses out, that we have explicitly in another Mishnah. So that can't be what we're talking about, because it says, Tashlume Nezek. The way that the Mishnah phrases the obligation of the Mazik is that he has to pay Tashlume Nezek. What is Tashlume Nezek? That teaches you that the Balim are mitapel b'nevela. Rashi over here explains that the Gemara over there goes through the whole Mishnah as midayek in all the lishanot of the Mishnah, and they're midayek of Tashlume Nezek, that it teaches you that the Balim are mitapel b'nevela. It might be because of the way that it's written. It says that it's not that he pays compensation, it says Tashlume Nezek. He only pays the Tashlum of the Nezek itself. What's the Nezek? The nezek is the differential between the live animal and the dead animal. And that's it. He's not, Mishalem, he's not making compensation for all losses. He's making compensation for simply that differential in value. And so based on that, we already know that the Pchat Nevela is the problem of the Nizak, of the Baalim themselves. Where it says, Chad B'Tam v'Chad B'Muad. It's teaching us that there's both, in the case of Tam and Muad, the Nevela is the Nizak's problem. Mitzricha, and I need both of them. Tishmainim Tam, Mishum Akati Lo Yayid. If you tell me by Tom, I would think the reason that it is because he's not a Muad yet. Of Muad, the Ayed, in a case by Muad where he already has that knowledge that this shore is problematic in behavior, Emelo, maybe over there the Mazik will have to deal with the Pchad Nevela. If you only told me by Muad, the reason he doesn't have to pay Pchad Nevela is because he's paying the full Nezek. Since he's already paying the full Nezek, we say, look, then Nizak's got to take some part of this. About Tom, Emelo. Maybe by Tom, where he's only paying Chatzin Nezek, he should be responsible for the Pchat Nevela, because he's already off the hook for a portion of the money. So Tzricha, that's why I need to mention Pchat Nevela, both by Tom and by Muad, that they are the responsibility of the Nizak. Tashma. Ma ben Tom l'Muad. What is the difference between a Tom and a Muad? Shatam mishalem Chatzin Nezek migufo. Umuad mishalem Nezek shalem min ha'aliyah. The difference between them is, number one, Tom pays Chatzin Nezek, Muad pays Nezek shalem. Number two is the methodology of payment. By a tam, you cannot take more money than the animal that did the damage. That means the animal that killed the other animal or damaged the other animal, and you're coming to pay chatzi nezek over here. In that instance, the cap or the ceiling on what the mazik pays is the value of his animal. He will not pay in excess of the value of his animal. So assuming that the chatzi nezek is less than the value of his animal, it's not an issue. But if the Chatzin Nezek exceeds the value of his animal, he'll be capped out at the value of his animal. That's what's called migufo. He pays from the value of the goof of the animal, the tam. On the other hand, Muad pays min aliyah. Min aliyah means there's no ceiling, basically. Min meitav sheminichsei mazik. He gets the best of the property of the mazik. He can make the claim. Again, there's no ceiling. Whether aliyah means from the best, where aliyah means, or the word aliyah here means like an attic, means we go up to the attic. There's no ceiling over here. It's as high as it goes, whatever it is, he's got to pay for it. It has no connection to the value of the animal that did damage. Those are the differences between a tam and a muad. Velotani. Now, if you believe chatzi nezek is a knas, this should be another difference, which is that if someone comes and admits to chatzi nezek, he would be patur. If he comes and admits to nezek shalim, he would be chayav. That's another difference that's not mentioned over here. How come we don't have that difference? If you believe like Rabbi Buna Breda Rabbi Yeshua, who said chatzi nezek is a knas, then that should be another difference between tam and muad. Why is that absent? So Gemara says Tana Vishier. The Tana left out other items. Now we have this principle that if a Mishnah lists items, then we assume that the list is exclusive. If we find one exception to the rule, then we know that the list is exclusive and that is left out for a reason. If we start to find more exceptions to the rule, we say that the Tana tried to give you a general picture. It didn't cover everything. Since it didn't cover anything, there can be things that were left out. It's not the way that the Gemara says it's Tana Ruchlohu. He's like a spice seller. He's got to go around and list everything off. He's got to give you the whole list. No, he tries to give you a big picture. So you have to determine, anytime you have a Tanaic work or you have a Mishnah, you have to determine if the list is exhaustive. If it is exhaustive, then anything that's left out is left out for that reason, and we know that you're medayek, that it means something. Then if the list is not exhaustive, then you just know that he's trying to give you a principle, and based on that principle, you'll be able to extrapolate to other items, but it's not exclusive, the list. So the Gemara says, if one is left out, that's certainly not a reason to say that he left one out. One even went out means that the list was comprehensive. And this one that's left out is for a reason that it's left out. But if I say Tana Vishiyar, that the Tana left out other items, if I can prove to you that he left out more than one item, then you can't be Midayek, then I'm wrong over here. And that's what the Gemara says. Tana Vishiyar, my Shiyar. What did he leave out? The high Shiyar. He left this out. Shiyar Chatzi Kofer. He left out half payment of Kofer. So the Gemara here suggests that there's another item that he doesn't mention, which is that a Muad pays full kofar, and a Tam pays chatzi kofar. Most of the Tanaim believe that a Muad pays kofar, and a Tam pays nothing. That was what Rabbi Huna Brei Yeshua was claiming was left out of the Mishnah, that a Muad pays full kofar, a Tam pays nothing. So there you have something else that he could have mentioned that's the difference between a Tam and a Muad, and he doesn't mention that. In addition, what else did he leave out? According to Rabbi Huna Brei Rabbi Yeshua, he also left out Paganiska Kenosa. That was left out. Now, the Gemara says, Imishum Chatzi Kofer, Lav Shiurahu. If you're talking about Chatzi Kofer, that's not called a Shiur. Now, there are two ways to learn this Gemara. One way to say is that it's a question on Rabbi Huna Brei Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Huna Brei Rabbi Yeshua, he was saying that Tana Vishiyar, the Tana left out more than one item. He left out Chatzi Kofer, and he also left out the case of Paganiska Kenosa. He left out two items. So it could be over here, the Gemara is saying that's not right, because Chatzi Kofer really wasn't left out. And I'll show you why in a second. The other part the Gemara here might be doing over here is helping Rav Papa. Rav Papa says it's Paganiska Mamona. That means that in the case of Paganiska Mamona, the Tana didn't leave anything out. But now we find that he did leave something out. He left out Kofer. According to Rav Papa, why did the Mishnah leave out Chatzi Kofer? That should be a difference between Tam and Muad. Why is it left out? The Gemara is saying, Mishum Chatzi Kofer Lav Shiurahu. Chatzi Kofer is not left over. So it could be answering it from both parties. It could be answering for Rav Papa, or it could be answering for Rav Huna Brei Yeshua, addressing why Chatzi Kofer is not considered to be Shiur, because, Habmani Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Hey, it is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Damar Tam Mishalim Chatzi Kofer. It's according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says that a Tam is Mishalim Chatzi Kofer. Before, the Gemara says, what was left out is that a Muad pays Kofer. Most of the Tanaim believe that a Muad pays Kofer, and a Tam pays nothing. So that is a Shiur. That was what Rabbi Huna Brei Yeshua was claiming was left out of the Mishnah. That a Muad pays full Kofer, a Tam pays nothing. So now the Gemara says, that's not a Shiur. Why is that a Shiur? Because this is according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that a Muad pays full Kofer, a Tam pays Chatzi Kofer. You know what that means? If you can look at Rashi, it says that it looks exactly like Chatzi Nezek. Nezek Shalim and Chatzi Nezek. It's no different. It's subsumed under the statement in the Mishnah that Muad pays Shalim and Atam pays Chatzi. So yeah, if it's Nezek, it's Nezek. If it's Kofer, it's Kofer. It's just the same thing, but with a different name on it. So what the Gemara is answering over here is that the author of the Mishnah, this is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who believes there is Chatzi Kofer. And since there is Chatzi Kofer, it's no different than the case of Nezek Shalem and Chatzi Nezek, and therefore it's not left out. So now, if you say it's a question on Rabbi Yehuda Breit of Yeshua says Tana v'Shir, and the answer is it's not Shir because it's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. How strong a question is that? Rabbi Yossi Aglili is a Dat Yachid, and in a Dat Yachid, who says that you have to set up the Mishnah as a Dat Yachid? Rabbi Yehuda Breit Yeshua should say, I don't hold like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. I hold like all the other Tanaim who say that it's not. It might be, the right would suggest over here, that it's because the answer of Tana v'Shir is a difficult answer. It's a Dokak answer. And if we can find an author to this Breit or Mishnah that says something that will make it that we don't have to say Tana v'Shir, we'd much rather do that than say Tana v'Shir. So since we've had Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that's the route we're going to take and not Tana v'Shir. Therefore, it's a question of Ravuna Grave Yeshua. On the other hand, if we're saying this is answering for Rapapa and explain why Rapapa doesn't have a question from this Mishnah, it's easy to understand now what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying is, for Rapapa, it's not Tana v'Shir anything because you can have a sheet like Rabbi Yossi Aglili who says that there's nothing left out over here. And therefore, there's no chatzi kofer. It has to do with the drusho. By the case of Tom, it says uvala shor naki. Over there, we said naki means he's exempt. What is he exempt from? Most Tanaim believe that uvala shor naki is naki mi kofer. He pays no kofer when he's Tom. Rabbi Yossi Aglili has another drusho with the dmei vladot that he says that if it gored a pregnant woman and by yitzu yiladeha and she loses or miscarries over there, then uvala shor naki. If it was a Tom, he doesn't have to pay in that case for the Dmei Vladot. That's what the Naki is. But for killing someone, he's got to pay Chatzi Kofer. So depending on how you darshan a Balash or Naki, will determine whether it is Chatzi Kofer by Tom or not. By Tom, and we have Rabbi Yosef Lili, who learned something else from Balash or Naki, and therefore Chatzi Kofer is Chayav. Now, as Tosfot points out of here, we find nowhere in Shas that Rabbi Yosef Lili says this. There's nowhere in Shas that Rabbi Yosef Lili says that you pay Chatzi Kofer. This is all a diuk of what he says, that the fact that he doesn't learn, he has a different limud for Bala Shor Naki, the Gemara is midayek out of Rabbi Yosef Lili that he must believe that there's Chatzi Kofer. And therefore it assigns that opinion to him because if you don't have Bala Shor Naki, how do you know that you don't pay Chatzi Kofer? So maybe there is another limud, but we don't know of it. And since Rabbi Yosef Lili doesn't give us an alternative and only learns something else from Bala Shor Naki, the Gemara assumes that it's Chatzi Kofer. So it's even more strange over here in terms of we're setting up like a Tana, who never says such a thing. It's a diuk out of his position that Chatzi Kofer is paid, and therefore we're setting up this Mishnah in order to say that, okay, lo Tana v'Shir. If you think it's trying to upend Rabbi Huna Breid or Yeshua and say it's not Tana v'Shir, we have a diuk in a Tana, who is a Dat Yochid, and we're saying, no, it wasn't Tana v'Shir because of that. Again, according to the other Rishonim, we learned that this is for Rav Papa, it makes sense. Because we're just showing, according to Rav Papa, he can come up with a way to show that this is not Tana v'Shir by Kofer, because he can say, the Yiyuk out of Rabbi Yossi Aglili gets you to Chatzi Kofer. It's much simpler to read it that way. According to those who read it, that it's trying to upend Rabbi Huna Breid Rabbi Yeshua, this is a hard way to upend him by bringing a Diyuk from a Tana that's a Dat Yachid to say, see, it's not Tana v'Shir. Rabbi Huna Breid Rabbi Yeshua just say, listen, either Rabbi Yossi Aglili doesn't hold that way, or even if he does hold that way, I hold like all the other Tanaim that disagree with him. So now the Gemara says, Tashma, Hemit Shoriyat Ploni, Oshoro Shelporni. My shore killed so-and-so, or it killed so-and-so's shore. Harizem Mishalema Piatzmo. He's paying on his own admission. So what do you see here? You see, it can't be Knas. If he's paying it, it's certainly not Knas. My la Bitam. It must be by a Tam, and then it'll be a question of Huna Breid Yeshua says, Paganizka can also. Over here, he's paying on Piatzmo. The Rashi, V'imishum diktani ba'imit shariyat ploni, dichiyuvo kofer, v'tam la bar kofer, hamani Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So the Rashi says that it's Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That way, if he kills, he would pay Chatzi Kofer, and you would have to assume that that Chatzi Kofer is Mamon. Lo b'muad. No, it's a case of Muad. Aval b'tam mai. So then, what would be the din by tam? Enu mishalem al piatzmo. You wouldn't pay. Adatani seifa. The Mishnah then continues and says, Avdosha ploni. If he admits to Avdosha ploni, enu mishalem al piatzmo. He doesn't pay on his own volition. Niflog v'nitna bidida. Then do a finer distinction. If you want to have a case where he pays al piatzmo and a case where he doesn't pay al piatzmo, so you're telling me that it's a case of muad. So the case of muad where he pays al piatzmo is when he comes and says it killed someone, it damaged someone else's shore. If he comes and says that it killed an eved, then he doesn't pay because that's a knas. Gemara says just make the distinction within shore and say if it's a shore muad, he's going to pay. If it's a shore tam, he's not going to pay. Why move on to eved at all? So that's in the case of muad. Of time, enu mishalem al piatzmo. Gemara says kula b'muad kamayri. The entire Mishnah is talking about a muad, and the basic answer of the Gemara is what you are suggesting. In the Mishnah is don't change topics. That's what we say. That when a Tana is on a single topic, he's not going to change. So here he switched from killing someone or a shor to killing an eved. So it switched topics. You're saying stay on a single topic. Just do it with muat and tam. Well, switching from muat to tam is no different than switching from killing someone or a shor and killing an eved. That switch is the same type of switch. And therefore the tana just stayed on muat the whole way. By staying on muad the whole way, the way that you create the differential where he pays al piyatz more or not, is the difference between who he kills. If you want to switch it and say it's the mazik that switched, the shor was once muad, once tam, that's no less of a switch than switching the nizak, who was damaged in this case. And that's the Gemara's answer. You're asking for it to be finer in distinction doesn't really solve a problem. Because in either case, the tana has to switch. So the tana switched the nizak. You want him to switch the mazik? Either way, you're going to end up with a change in the second half of the Mishnah. And so he chose to do it that way. You want to do it another way, that's fine. But it's not a proof against me that Tom is Mamon and not Kenas. Tashma, Zekla, Kol Mishalem Yeter al Mashe Ezik, Enu Mishalem al Piatzmo. Ha, Pachod Mashe Ezik Mishalem al Piatzmo? That you're indicating to me that if he pays less than the value, then he would be paying al Piatzmo? Lo Teima, Ha Pachod Mashe Ezik, Eleima Ha, Kamashe Ezik Mishalem, al piyatzmo. Anybody who pays directly the correlation between the damage and the payment, of al pachot mai, inu mishalem al piyatzmo. So if that's the case, litne, then it should write this. Zakol, koshen mishalem, kamashi ezik, inu mishalem al piyatzmo. Just write it more generically. If you don't pay the amount that you damaged, then it's called a kenas. As long as it's not equal to the value of the nezek, then it's a kenas. The mashma pachot, to mashma yeter. Because it would be more or less, the Gemara says, tiyufta. That is a strong question against our Mishnah. It's a problem with the Lashon of the Mishnah. V'hilchata. The Loche is Palga Niska Knasa. The Loche is like Rav Huna Berei the Rav Yeshua. Gemara says, Tiyufta V'hilchata. Right, that's a big problem. You just said about our Mishnah that it should have worded it differently to include things that are less. So how come it didn't do that? And you're saying, Tiyufta. And then you pass Kanaloka, that Palga Niska Knasa, which really runs into that problem, because our Mishnah should have mentioned Pachot, if you're talking about Palga Niska Knasa. Gemara says, in time of my itotav, ishim delok tani kamashi ezik. What's the problem here? What's the issue with the language of the Mishnah? Because it didn't write it in this way. Lo psikale. It's not definitive. And this is what I mentioned before. Kaven to ika chatzi nezek tsrorot. The reason is because below the value, chatzi nezek is not always a knasa. Even if you agree over here that chatzi nezek was associated with goring, with a tam, is because it is a knas, that doesn't mean that every chatzi nezek is knas, because there's a case the Gemara discusses in Baba Kama, which is called chatzi nezek tsrorot. Chatzi nezek tsrorot is when an animal is walking along the street and kicks up pebbles or stones, and those pebbles or stones do damage. When they do damage, you only pay chatzi nezek for that. So that chatzi nezek, the Gemara says, is halacha lemoshe misinai, is mamon and not knas. So therefore, if that's the case, the Mishnah cannot make a definitive statement that chatzi nezek, that is, or payments that are less than the value of nezek, are always knas. That's not true. There is an exceptional case, which is the chatzi nezek tsrorot, where it is considered to be mamon. So since the Mishnah couldn't lay that out in a manner that is definitive, the Mishnah will only make statements that are definitive and not have exceptions to the rule. So that's why it just said yeter al mashe ezik, not pachot. Because pachot sometimes is knas, sometimes there is an instance where it is mamon. And because of that, it didn't make the statement. Since you have chatzi nezek tsrorot, hilchot gemirla de mamono, that the halacha Moshe Misai is that it is classified as mamon. And since it is classified as mamon, then even less will not necessarily generate knas. So you can't make a definitive statement that the amount you pay is not the exact amount of the nezek, that it's knas, because here he's not paying the exact amount of nezek and still considered to be mamon. Shumhachi loktani. So v'hashto da amart palka nizka knasa. Now that we've already determined that chatzi nezek is knas, hay kalbo de achal imre. If you have a dog that ate a lamb or a sheep, vishunra, or a cat or a weasel, de achal tanagoy ravrave, big chickens, mishunahu. That's not the normal behavior. Basically over here, it's not just eating it. They killed it and they ate it. So it's not, usually not the case that the dog will come and kill a sheep or a lamb of sorts and eat it. It's also not the case that a cat will try to kill a big chicken or a large chicken. They usually can't overcome them, and therefore they will not eat it. So cats will not do that, and therefore it's under the rubric of Karen, which is it's Mishuna, and it's Knas. Lo magbinan bibavel. We do not collect that in Bavel. Bavel does not have smicha, and therefore the Bate Dinim in Bavel are not empowered to collect knas. They're only empowered to adjudicate cases and collect mamon. So over here, if we determine that Chatzi Nezek is knas, when it's unusual, then they will not be able to adjudicate these cases and force payment in these cases. Aval Zutre, if there are smaller chickens, then Orchehu, then it is the normal way, and Umagbian, and then you would be able to collect in Beitin, because then it's money, it's mamon, it's not Karen anymore, then it becomes like Shen and Regel, and in that case, he pays Nezek Shalem, and you have to pay. Vitafas lo mafkin amine. If he goes ahead and he grabs the value from the mazik, then we don't take it away from him. Now, Tosafot over here in the Rabbeinu Tam makes an interesting point. He says that he can only grab the value from the animal that did the damage. If he grabs the value from the animal that did the damage, then we don't go back and pull it away from him, because Chatzi Nezek is paid out migufo. But if he goes and just grabs stam property from the other individual, in that case, we will be mafkin amine. Why? Because if we're not mafkin amine, what's going to end up happening? Well, he's allowed to take it, so he goes and grabs the other guy's car. So now he impounded the other guy's car, and he says, this guy damaged me, so we're going to have to say, look, he took more than the damage that was done here. So what's Beit Din Af going to do? They're going to have to figure out what the Chatzi Nezek is. They're going to say, you have to return all the value except for the Chatzi Nezek. You know what they just did? They just adjudicated a case of Knas, effectively. They basically just created a case where they're going to have to adjudicate Knas. So the Rabbeinu Tam says, you can't do that. You have to be a case where he grabs the animal itself, which is the one that is culpable for the Chatzi Nezek. In that case, lo mafkin amine. But if he starts grabbing other pieces of property, we are going to be mafkin amine, because otherwise you're going to force us to deal with cases of Knas. And we're not allowed to deal with Knas. Although many Rishonim disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam and suggest that in the case of Tafsinan, it means from any property of the Nizak. Because over here we're trying to get restitution for the damage that's done. And therefore Tofes works in that case. This vigilanteism works to get him his payment when Beit Din cannot execute or adjudicate on these types of cases. And therefore it doesn't matter what he takes, as long as he doesn't take an excess of the value of the Nezek that was done. If the Nizak says, Akvuli Zimna l'Eretz Yisrael, Mikavinan le. If he says, set me up a court date in Eretz Yisrael, we set it up for him. Because if he goes to Eretz Yisrael, he can get the Knas paid. So if he says, tell the Mazik, this and this date, we're going to Eretz Yisrael, the Beit Din in Bavel will set it up. And if the Mazik doesn't show up, Vilo Azil, Mishamtinan le. And if he doesn't go to Eretz Yisrael to adjudicate the case in Eretz Yisrael, we put him in Shamta, we excommunicate the Mazik. Ben Kach, Mishamtinan le. And the Gemara says, you know what? In the end, we put him to Shamta either way. Whether he asks for a date in Eretz Yisrael, the Nizak, or whether he doesn't ask for a date in Eretz Yisrael, we're going to put the Mazik into excommunication. We're going to say to him, get rid of this animal that's causing damage. So what we're going to do here is we're going to say, either he says, go to Eretz Yisrael and adjudicate the case there, and if he refuses to go, we're going to put him in excommunication. If the Nizak doesn't come and ask us for a court date in Eretz Yisrael, it's just not worth it to him, then we're still going to force the Mazik to deal with this animal, and we're going to put him in Shamta until he deals with this, get rid of this animal. Meet the Rabbi Natan. Because of this, member of Rabbi Natan, the Tanya Rabbi Natan Omer, we have a bright thought in which Rabbi Natan says, Minayin shelo yigadel adam kelev ra betoch beito. How do we know that a person is not allowed to breed up a bad dog in his house? Velo yamid sum ra'ua betoch beito, and he shouldn't keep around a broken ladder in his house. Shenemar, lo tasim damin bebeitecha. You can't have blood in your house. Blood in your house are things that cause damage to other people. So you can't keep around items that are going to cause other people problems. You're going to cause damage. So when that's the case, Rabbi Natan says, you have an obligation to get rid of items that will cause damage, as well as animals that are going to cause damage. You're under an obligation to deal with that and to ensure that it's dealt with. How do I do that? We put you in Shamta until you deal with the issue. Because since you don't have a knas, meaning that the way the Torah deals with it is we penalize him. So he gets the message. He's paying Chatzi Nezek. He knows that if he does it, he's going to keep paying Nezek. That's the way to disincentivize him from keeping this animal, is to force him to pay. And eventually it's going to cost him at a certain point. It's not worth him keeping the animal. But if you can't adjudicate Knas, then you have a problem over here, because how do we disincentivize him? So the way to do that is through Shamto. We force him to get rid of it and to deal with the animal that's causing Nezek. So with that, we end this Perek Hadron Halach, Elu Narot. We're just going to start Mishnah here. Nara shenit patata, a girl that nara that was seduced, boshta upigama uknasa shelaviha. The boshet, the pigam, and the knas all belong to her father. Vatsar bitfusa, and the same thing is true by pain by tfusa. Tfusa is a reference to meanes, case of rape, because in the Torah it says vatafsa uta, So that's what tfusa means. Someone was grabbed. She was taken against her will. Amda b'din ad shemlo meita av. If they come to court before the father dies, harihen shala av. Then they belong to the av. Meita av. If the av dies, harihen shel achin. Then it belongs to the brothers. Because he's already come to Dinakin, they've already made it into an obligation that is shayach to the father. Then the inheritors of the father are the entitled parties here, and that becomes the brothers. Lo yispik al amod b'din ad shemeita av. If they were not successful getting to a din before the father dies, harishen otzma. Then he never made the claim, he never removed the money, and therefore the monies now go to her. Because the father has rights in his daughter's money, which is that kol shevach ni'urela avia, anything that is a result of her ni'urim, he is entitled to. So he's entitled to her masiyadeh, he's entitled to her mitziyah, he's also entitled to these payments that come out of her being a ne'ara. But if he's no longer there, then all this belongs to herself, and therefore the payment will go to her. Amgad din achalo bagra, if they went to din before she became a bugeret, harieshen shalav, then they belong to the av. Meita av, harieshen achin, and again, the items belong to achim. Lo yispik al amod b'din achal bagra, it did never brought the case to court before she became a bugeret, meaning that she's on her own reconnaissance. Hariyein shalatzma. Then they belong to her, because a bugeret, na'ara, the father has entitlement to the payments. So therefore, if he gets her to din while she's a na'ara, then he has entitlements to the payments. But if she already ages to the point where she is entitled to her own payments, then the father has no more rights anymore. So if he got it to din before she turned to a bugeret, then they belong to the father and the brothers will inherit it. If he doesn't get it, then it's she's a bugeret that belongs to her. Right, that's the difference. You can't be morish knas. You can be morish mamon. The question is, when is the change from knas to mamon? So that's what the Mishnah is trying to turn. The Tanakhama suggests, when is that switch? So he says, b'am de bedin. Rabbi Shimon says, until you collect it, it's still a knas, until you've actually got a hold of it. Mamon, oh, you're right, you can be morish. Claims of mamon, you can be morish. You can't be morish knas. Tosafot points out, or asks the question, that's all good by knas, that he shouldn't be able to be morish it. But the other parts of Boshin and Begam, which are Mamon, then why shouldn't he be able to grant that to the children? Why shouldn't he be able to be Morish that? So Tosfot says it must come from some of the Limudim that we saw before, as Tosfot says that there's a Hekesh between Boshin and Begam and Knas. And sometimes Boshin and Begam can be separated from the Knas, sometimes they have the same din as the Knas. And over here it's clear that the Mishnah views Boshin and Begam being together as a package in the Knas. And just like he can't be Morish the Knas to his children, he also cannot be morish the boshet and begam over here, even though the boshet and begam are mamon, and the knas is a knas. Although the Ramban disagrees over here and says, eino chanami, that the boshet and begam are different than the knas. The boshet and begam will stay with the father or the father's children no matter what, and the only thing being discussed in this Mishnah is the knas itself. Now, even though in general, when it comes to tsar, we say that the tsar of the children does not belong to the father. Over here, there might be entitlement to the father to the tsar, because, as we saw in the previous perek, that the father has the right to give this girl over for marriage and to cause her this tsar. And since he has the ability to generate the tsar by giving over to marriage, therefore he is entitled to the tsar over here, or the payment of the tsar. Rabbi Shimon Omer, im lo yispika legvot ad shemeita av, harihen shel atzma. It's not enough that they got to din. It has to be that he actually has to collect it. Afal pisham dabadin, v'abi mamon da'avlo rishol benav adamati liyadeh. Until he makes collection on the decision of Beit Din, there is no money here. The money only becomes the father's money at the moment that he collects it. Before that point in time, it's still up in the air who the beneficiary is. So therefore, he has to make the collection prior to losing control over it. That means either prior to dying or prior to becoming a bogeret. If the money's only paid after that point in time, it belongs to the woman herself. And again, if the father dies, the brothers will not be entitled. If he collects earlier, it's fine. According to the Tanakhama, it's not about the collection time, it's about the adjudication time. As long as it was adjudicated prior to her becoming old enough to receive the monies herself, then it belongs to the father. Maseyada umitziata. Afopishalo gavta. Maseyadaim or mitziah, even though he has not collected them yet, meitav arein shalachim. So there's a difference over here. The difference being that things that the father is entitled to, these monetary items like Masei Yadayim and or Mitziah, they are considered as if collected. Even though he has yet to collect them, they're as if collected. On the other hand, when it comes to enforcing a claim in Beit Din, over there it's not considered collected until it is collected. So Rabbi Shimon differentiates between this Knas are the payments that derive from the mifuta, and the payments that are normally come from Masiyadah and from Mitziyata. All right, so we'll stop here by the Gemara on the top of Membet Amud Aleph.